And now, IMRO's 2023 Best Local or Regional News Programme, The Voice of the Northwest, The 9 Till Noon Show, with Greg Hughes.
And you're very welcome back to The 9 Till Noon Show. Good morning if you're after joining us. If you missed the first hour, unfortunately you missed out on a great conversation, I thought, between journalist Cathy Donaghy, Brendan Byrne, who's the CEO of the Irish Fish Processors and Exporters Association, and Michael White, he's chair of the Green Party in Donegal. We discussed the fallout from the Stardust inquest. That sort of led on then to a broader conversation, I think, really, about how this country is run. And not necessarily by the government or an anti-government approach, really. It doesn't matter who's in government, about who actually is running the country. And then, of course, too, about Helen McEntee choosing not to attend the Garda Representative Association. If you missed it, well worth a listen back. It'll be available on our podcast, which goes live before one on our website, highlandradio.com. You can listen to all 3 hours. And, of course, you can watch it back if you wish on YouTube. But thank you so much to all of you texting in over the course of the morning so far. Also, by the way, Oisin Kelly's going to come in. He's our sports editor, of course. He's going to be doing live match commentary on Donegal versus Derry. Is this Jim McGuinness's first big test? I suppose you could have said the same of Armagh. But anyway, it's a big game and it matters. It's old rivalry. There's different men in charge and it's going to be packed. Tickets were like hen's teeth, weren't they? So it's going to be packed. It's going to be a great atmosphere. We hope it's a great game. How do you think it's going to go? Now, obviously, you can sort of go with your heart or your head, but how do you think Donegal v Derry is going to go? If you want a WhatsApp or text, 086 60 25000. If you want to shout from Derry, please do, of course, 00353 86 60 25000. We've got thousands and thousands of really loyal listeners in Derry and Tyrone who listen to us over the air. We really, really do appreciate it. And we want you involved in the conversation as well. And perhaps I don't mention that enough. It's very important to us. So if you want to text or WhatsApp from the north of Ireland, strangely, you still have to do it with a international dialing code, 00353 86 60 25000. Do you know what I tend to do now? I put all the dialing code in all my numbers when I put them in, especially WhatsApp. Right, some comments. You wouldn't walk in Letterkenny these days either. It's just as bad as Dublin. I have a young family. I dread them going to teenage discos in Letterkenny in future. Letterkenny is a write-off. But is that a reality or a perception, and your perception? Because we don't hear of a ton of crime out of Letterkenny, do we? That's a question. So that's why I wanted to sort of ask Cathy. She says she would no longer walk her work route late at night from Dublin. And she says it's not because she perceives it from what she's heard or the conversation that's out there. It's because of what she sees, of course. Why did Catherine Martin not provide the funding for the WRC in Ireland? If it was the GEA, there'd have been no issue in providing the funding. Well, we'll have to dig into the bottom of that because the country missed out big time there. Why is the GRA being accused of making the wrong decision not to invite the commissioner to their AGM now? There was no criticism when the decision was originally made. It sounds like the government is mobilising the media to support the minister's childish decision to snub the meeting. The minister is the one who should be revisiting her decision. Well, the decision was relatively recently announced. Maybe you're conflating that with Drew Harris's decision not to attend, but we've only just learned of Minister McEntee's. I don't know what you mean by mobilising the media either, by the way. Certainly not here. I didn't know the views of Michael White. I didn't know the views of Cathy or Brendan, nor do I know the views of listeners. And they're all read out and they're all listened to. Greg, as far as I can see, Official Ireland turned its back on the Stardust families over the years. They were from a working class community, almost blamed for the fire. Arson was mentioned, more than mentioned. It was a finding of an investigation. Reminds me of the Birmingham Six and Hillsborough disaster. Working class people with no money for lawyers or barristers. What are the panel's thoughts on the protest outside Minister O'Gorman's house this week? Is it a step too far or the only way to make them listen? Well, I only really became aware of that after I saw that text. I didn't really see much of it. I don't watch the news, you see, so I get my news elsewhere, and I just didn't come across this. What it appears to be is banners that have been erected outside Minister O'Gorman's house. He seems to live in a cul-de-sac, I'm not quite sure where. And for some reason, you couldn't get people to wear a mask back in the day, could you? People were literally protesting wearing them. But there's lots of people with masks and their face covered outside Minister O'Gorman's house for whatever reason. And I also note a number of Garda cars sitting there, so they clearly don't think it's an issue. Is it a step too far bringing someone's house? Feels like that to me. I think there are other ways. But then again, people say, look, nothing else is working. That's not going to work either, though. I don't know. Too much money in politics and big pensions. Nobody wants to rock the boat, maybe. The late Senator Paddy McGowan never took no for an answer. Getting elected never changed him. Another, both Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have failed the people of Donegal and other areas that are left behind for years. Piers Doherty was, in my opinion, perhaps the first to highlight the state of our county at Dáil level. He certainly has been very powerful in relation to that, but no, there have been other politics. Politicians in the past, I remember, that have, even before he was first, and I was actually there that night when he was first selected. Gerry Adams was there as well. It's kind of strange now. I'd never met Gerry Adams before. The Irish people always forget all the sickening crises caused by the continuity of incompetent governments, plus self-serving civil servants, legal servants, and again, I think we're clear in which civil servants this caller's talking of, legal services, and sadly in more recent time, government-monetized NGOs. Time to give others a chance to manage our country before the deepening ravine between the haves and the have-nots, the happy, well-off and the poor, and the vulnerable Irish people gets even worse. Photos were circulated on social media last year where a family went to the office of a public representative to talk to him about the home falling down, and they were told he was not there. Yet they witnessed him leaving out the back door. These people were elected to represent their citizens. Instead, they just represent government. Well, that is really an eye-opener, says another caller. Listening to that statement on the civil service, bigger pockets, etc., that is shocking and very sad. We all knew they had more power than some politicians. They definitely should be changed along with the government. Another is discriminatory that refugees can go to university for free in Ireland and avail of free accommodation without means testing. Well, this is not available to Irish people. Another just final two before we take a break on the Stardust fire and the inquest. A caller says the Stardust fire was in a time where there were very few fire standards. All nightclubs were probably the same. So you want to jail and sue an old nightclub owner? This was a terrible, sad event with the authorities didn't have any safety standards at the time. Nothing will bring back these young, innocent people. The present government are not to blame for the failures of past ones. I get where you're coming from in terms of, you know, maybe furnishings that burn and, you know, they cause fumes that incapacitate people. You wouldn't see that now. It would have been normal at the time. Wall coverings and what have you. I get you. I don't think you can timeline a point where it would have been okay to chain doors closed. I used to DJ in nightclubs back in the day, and I saw it once or twice and brought it to the attention of management and the situation was changed. I really wasn't involved in journalism at that point, but it just did not seem right. And I says, why is that door chained up? What was happening is, as you see, in one particular nightclub, which is now defunct, is people would open the door and then their mates would come in and then they'd close the fire door. So it wasn't alarmed. It was a busy, noisy nightclub. And the door was chained up to prevent that happening, but that was a fire exit and one of the only exits that you could have got out of there. And as I say, it's not even really from this area this nightclub was in. So that was why. So it's really not. I don't think you can sort of say, well, it was 40 odd years ago, so it's okay to chain up fire doors or to block fire doors. But I do take your point in terms of fire safety standards in other areas. But I also have yet to figure out in my own mind what's the advantage in pursuing it now at this point? And I'll take my guidance from the families on that one, to be honest with you. Are the political connections of the owners of the Stardust nightclub why we haven't got anywhere until now? Well, along those lines, Michael White was making that point of the Greens and said that's something perhaps that needs further investigation. You are tuned to the 9 till noon show here on your number one local radio station, Highland Radio. And we're broadcasting across the Northwest on air on various frequencies, but also across the region and across the world online. And you can also watch the programme as well. So much to come on the show. We're going to be talking sport, we're going to be talking entertainment, and we're going to be covering other issues as well. That's all on the way. More than five people have responded to a survey by campaigners which assess the need for the return of a daycare services to Carn Donagh Community Hospital more than 4 years after they were suspended. The group calling for the restoration of daycare services at Carn Donagh Community Hospital says the survey shows there's a phenomenal need for the services which were stopped more than 4 years ago, as I mentioned. And now they're going to have the ears of the minister responsible, Minister of State Mary Butler. She's responsible for mental health in older people, and the group have secured a meeting with her in Ballyshannon in 6 days' time. Tony Doherty is of the Restoration of Carn Donagh Daycare Services campaign, and he's with us now. Tony, thanks for your time today.
Thanks very much, Greg, and thanks for bringing this very important issue for the people of North Inishowen to the attention of the greater public.
No problem. We've talked about it before, and we certainly will again going into the future. Right, so this, a great move, I think, by the campaign to sort of, pull the views of people. It really strengthens the argument. Talk to us about the history of the days of the centre. In other words, what services were there and how they were lost, etc.
So daycare services, they're where elderly can go to get, to get their medication checked, to get blood pressure. So low-level medical interventions. They would have got a hot meal. There would have been entertainment where you would have had, played a game of cards. They'd been having music, bingo, arts and crafts. But the biggest thing, Greg, the biggest thing was that you were meeting your friends and your neighbours, and that social interaction and that connection with your community in the last few years of your life. So that was lost, or rather that was closed down during COVID. And that was right and proper that was done so. But then whenever, if you cast your mind back in the sort of spring, summer of 2021, we started coming out of COVID, and Minister Mary Butler would have tweeted at that time in May 2021 to say that all daycare centres would start to be opened in the summer of 2021. And she also stated that any centres that required remedial works would be up and running by the end of 2021. So, that would have been communicated to the members in, locally here that, would have been my own father, for example. I would have been explaining to him that, Dad, listen, it's not opening in the summer of 2021, but it'll be available after Christmas. That never happened, Greg. We're 4 years on and we still don't have a daycare centre reopened in Carn Donagh Community Hospital.
And some of the services that you provide, say, Tony, that that were provided there, a hot meal, social outlets, company, community, even sort of blood pressure checks and what have you, kind of stuff that's very useful in prolonging people's well-being and lives as well. Do you know what I mean? It is more than it sounds. It's really, really important to the older generation.
Yeah, well, and that's exactly right, because what that service provided was, it was sort of first level medical intervention, which took pressure off the GP service, which in turn takes pressure off the hospital service, and which in turn takes pressure off the nursing home service. So having that, sort of preventive maintenance almost in place was fantastic. And, what I would say to you is, the local GP service wrote a letter to the HSE back last autumn, and they said, they have over 3,000 patients, of which 1,000 are aged over 60. And what they said was that, unfortunately, since the closure of the daycare service, they have watched many older patients become more helpless and isolated. Mm-hmm. And they said that they've witnessed firsthand how this has impacted not only the older patients, but also their carers who have suffered as a result of the service. So they wrote a very eloquent letter, which we will be also handing over to Mary Butler next Friday by way of educating her on how this has affected people locally.
Do you, what is your sense? Obviously, we know why it was closed, right? But then there's going to be a lot of reasons as to why it's not going to be open. And then we're going to be talking about investment. We're going to be talking about suitability. And we're going to be talking about this, that and the other. Are you satisfied that that's the right conversation to be had, that some of that stuff does need to be looked at? Or do you have a concern that this is putting hurdles up to the simple matter, or it should be a simple matter, of actually returning services here for the older people and their families?
So it's a complex situation that we find ourselves in. We have two asks. We'll be spending the first half of our meeting, Mary Butler, educating her on the situation. That we had, 56 people availed of that service back in 2019, and over half of those people are now dead, Greg. So we failed those people. The other half are sitting at home 16 hours a day. Mm. And what we'd be saying to Mary Butler is, are we going to repeat that over the next 4 years? Because we're all, you know, we're all responsible for this. We've got to get this thing sorted. We'll also be telling her that survey that you outlined at the start of this segment, that one of the key things that came out of that survey was that 270 people, Greg, that's 270 people would avail of this service immediately if it was reinstated. And we're very happy to share the results and findings of that survey with the HSE, with the government. But 270 people would avail immediately of this service. That's what we're finding right now.
It represents a great need for these services, you know.
It represents a great need for this service, yeah. These services. But on your question, the ask will be to Mary Butler is for the two things, Greg. One is for the immediate restoration of daycare services at Cowndon Community Hospital. Now, we know that there's IPC considerations in relation to all of that, all right? And you and I have discussed this before, right?
Just remind us what IPC is, sorry, Tony.
Infection prevention control measures.
Yeah, okay. Right, okay.
Yeah, so they're basically to keep you safe in a clinical environment. But, you know, the irony, of course, is that people are safe at home, you know, getting up, you know, and picking up infections at home without the support of the of medical intervention. But what we're asking for is the immediate restoration at Cairn Hospital. What we recognise that may be with smaller numbers, it may be staggered, it may be less time, but we can get people through that system. The two rooms that are there, Greg, right, they're sitting idle. They're actually used as storage rooms right now. I mean, isn't that just awful?
Yeah.
So we'll be asking, number one, is for the immediate restoration. And we look at ways of doing that, as I said, you know, stagger, smaller groups, less time. So whenever, instead of having 20 people there, 25 people there for 6 hours, we could have 8 or 10 people there for 2 hours.
That's reasonable. That's reasonable. But as long as it's not like, well, you know, we have that it turns into a big thing whereby, look, we'll try and identify somewhere else in the community and, you know, we will, whilst we bring things up to a certain standard, you know, we've heard it before. And then when we do that, it's like, well, staffing, you know, the staffing shortages, and it's hard to recruit people, and the people that were working there have now taken up roles elsewhere. And that's another hurdle. I don't want to be pessimistic at all, Tony, but I presume those are the types of commitments you're going to have to blast through with the minister. You know what I mean? So we don't come back with a whole bunch of promises, but it's how it's all implemented, really, I think, is the key. She needs to tell you that.
Well, there's all of that. But the second, and so there's all of that, Greg, to be ironed out. But remember, this is a service that was in place 50 years ago when we had no money, you know. And, you know, the population of Cowndon in the surrounding area has increased by 800 over the last small number of years. Like, there's a need. We have money for these things. But, you know, I take your point that, that we're going to have to thrash that out with her.
Yeah.
But the second ask that we will be asking for, and this is somewhat optimistic, I think, is that a working group has been set up by the HSE, and I suppose there's good news to say to your viewers. A working group has been set up comprising the staff members of HSE Estates, Older Person Services and Primary Care, and they held a meeting to look at potential accommodation to prioritise services within the grounds of Cowndon Community Hospital. And the options that are or were being considered in that meeting were capital works within the existing hospital, capital works in a different site, presumably somewhere else in Cowndon, the possible use of the James Connolly Memorial Hospital, which is part of that complex. And the fourth one is possible lease rental in Cowndon Town. So there is some wee bit of light at the end of the tunnel in relation to some meeting that's taken place. But what we're asking the minister is that we would be part of that group. We're asking for minutes for the meeting which already has taken place, and the action points and responsibilities and specific details on the next meeting, and that we'll work constructively with all stakeholders. Mm-hmm. But we want to be part of that.
Yeah, for sure.
And we work very constructively. So it's somewhat, you know, there's a wee bit of, you know, good news, maybe.
Sure,
in
I will
that
tease
regard,
that out. And I think, too, fundamentally, all we, kind of all of what we want is we don't want preferential treatment, but we want the same things available for our people, the same commitments that have been followed through elsewhere to be followed through for our older generation in and around Carndon. And we're not looking for something that no one else has. What we're looking for, especially too when it's demonstrable, that it makes people's lives better. They live, they live healthier, presumably. They certainly, have a better quality of life in the sunset years of their life. Stay with me, Councillor Albert Doherty. Obviously, has been working on this as well. It's been raised at regional health forum level. Regional health forum members will be there as well. Councillor, what do you want to hear from the minister?
Good morning. What I really want is that there will be immediate progress with the options presently being considered, and Tony has mentioned the four of them there. But critically, I believe the HSE had committed to convene in the near future further meetings to progress the above options and to have this conversation with relevant stakeholders. And it's my insistence that not alone is Tony in the group irrelevant. They are critical community representatives that must be, that are essential to be part of any resolution to the restoration. So I want to wish them well on Friday next and to highlight and prioritise their relevance. They packed a community hall when they brought this to the attention of the locals about the need for a campaign for restoration. And in addition, I will be there at Ballyshannon because in this local area, we are concerned about any reductions occurring to do with mental health, and we're concerned about the SRU unit in Carndonagh. We're concerned about the child and mental health services. We're concerned about respite and the lack of it. But critically important is the social calendar that can be addressed if we have the restoration. And that's something I say well done to the group, and they must be part of any critical future consultation.
Albert, I don't want to be cynical, actually. It's more optimistic. Often these meetings can be secured if a minister is coming with a little bit of good news. Am I being optimistic there, or do you believe that maybe Minister of State Mary Butler might have some positive indications to deliver?
Well, if she has, that would be a bonus, and I'm not aware of it. But what I am saying is I believe she's meeting because of the persistence of this group to have such a meeting, and of the consistent knocking on the door of the local minister and others to arrange it. And I believe through what she's hearing from HSE, there's an issue to be addressed, and it can only be addressed when all parties are around the table talking and listening to each other.
Councillor Albert Doherty, thank you very much indeed. I do appreciate your time. And Tony, again, listen, I mean, it's part of a journey, and maybe there can be some qualified optimism that a positive resolution can be found. But again, it's another example, a wonderful example of a really well organised local campaign with the right information, with an extensive survey to back up that information, and then to be able to secure a meeting with the minister. I hope that the quality and commitment of all of your efforts gets the reward it rightly deserves for our older generation, on whose shoulders we stand on, and we owe it to them to treat them with the care and respect we'd expect ourselves when we get older, if we're lucky enough to do so.
Craig, well said, and thank you again for your support. If I can just say finally that we are inviting all politicians and candidates in the local election to a meeting in Farns Pub in Carndonagh on Wednesday the 1st of May at 8 p.m. To, I suppose, educate them and maybe push some of them to support this cause, which is at the beating heart of our community.
Well done, Tony. Thanks for your time. We'll be in touch. Hopefully, too, we can secure an interview with the minister and see if we can get some info from her on the record. But for now, thank you very much indeed, Tony.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye. Tony Doherty there of the Restoration of Carn Donagh Services Daycare Services campaign. Right, thank you very much indeed for that. Now, if you like your sport, you're in for a treat this weekend. Whatever sport it is, big boxing on Saturday night, hurling, cricket, big news coming out of Finn Hock. All that's all over our website covered, and it's on all of our shows. I invited Oisin Kelly, our sports editor. The reason I'm saying all this is because he'd want to speak about everything, but I want to speak about Donegal versus Derry.
Yes.
Jimmy winning matches.
Ah, well, Jimmy could be winning matches tomorrow evening, yeah. It could be. Greg, we're going to have to wait and see. It's a great measure to see where Donegal are actually at under Jim McGuinness. When the draw was made, this is the game we've all been waiting on. Donegal have had their injury problems, as we know. There's four or five players there that didn't feature in the closing stages of the league. Was there enough time for them to get back to full fitness and play a part tomorrow? And if they do that, will they be up to match speed? We're just going to have to wait and
let's
see.
Let's talk about Derry for a second. Where do you rank Derry going into the championship?
Obviously, you have to rank them. You have to rank them as top two.
Right. So
maybe I still think, this is my own belief, maybe Dublin, when it comes to the crunch, may have a wee bit of an edge on it. Championship, maybe just seen as favourites. That was a huge result for Derry. It showed the rest of the country going, we are serious contenders. They were close to making a final last year where they were good against Kerry for the bulk of the game, but then fell away towards the end. Mm. Have they improved under Mickey Hart from last year? You would have to say, given their league form, yes, they have.
Okay.
So they'll have momentum. They'll have a bounce.
But Dublin can tend to build towards the championship.
Dublin,
right?
Yeah.
So we might not have seen the best Dublin against Derry. Did we see the best Derry against Dublin?
Well, no, in the championship.
God, that's a good question. You wouldn't get that in the DL debate or
well,
no, in
the good championship. how good they are come the championship. Donegal's going to be a really, really good test for them. Listen, call a spade, Derry. The reality is, they are further down the line in their conditioning and their development from where Donegal is. They've maybe got a 3 or 4 year head start
true,
on it.
True.
So when you factor in that, and you factor in how Derry are going at the moment, the way they come through the league, and obviously they beat Dublin, they're seen as one of the top three sides now in the country. That's where it's coming out that Derry are favourites for this game, and rightly so. And you have to agree with that.
In watching Donegal, we've sort of seen different Donegals within halves, let alone within games. What I've seen as an armchair supporter, right, and I'll label that myself in case someone else does, I've sort of seen a Donegal that doesn't give up to the final whistle, right? I've seen a Donegal that can sort of adapt in-game.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff, with no disrespect to those that went before, that I as a spectator thought was missing, right? At this point, do you think Jim McGuinness has worked out the best he can get from his players and what the best style for them is?
Yeah, well, it's what he has available to him, Greg. And it's back to the point I made earlier. Like, there's four big players. We have to see if they will feature tomorrow. Patrick McBerty, who's excelling under Jim McGuinness, played very well in Division 2 of the league. Ryan McHugh, missed last year, back in, one of the key players for Donegal in that campaign. Brendan McCall, who is a really, really solid fullback, and when you play Derry, you're going to need somebody like him on Shane McGuigan. And the fourth player is Owen Bann Gallagher, who obviously does a lot of running coming from deep. He would be seen as a key player. Now, if them four players are all available to Jim McGuinness, the dynamic of that whole team changes. If them players are not available for Jim McGuinness, Jim McGuinness has to continue to work with what he has and try to get the best out of it. There's no doubt with whatever team he has tomorrow, he's going to get the best out of them. And we have to see what the best is. We have to see what plan Jim McGuinness has. What sort of game is it going to be? Donegal might play this game tomorrow totally different than what they've done all year, because it is a totally different challenge to what they've met so far. Even in the league final against Armagh weren't that good. Donegal have played Division 2 football. This is up another level. That's what makes this so intriguing,
when,
Greg.
When you talk about Derry maybe being 3 or 4 years ahead of us, right, I don't think that's, and you can correct me if I'm wrong once I've finished the question or whenever. You know, often in my head, I would have thought that's about, you know, playing together tactically and what have you. But if you look at the Diary team, it's the strength of
the conditioning. It's the conditioning of the players. And there's lots of factors.
Tactically, with the best will in the world, if you're up against a bigger, stronger team, it's hard sometimes to offset that with tactics, especially when Derry are quite tactically astute themselves. And that's what makes this such a challenge for this Donegal team. It's not just about the decisions that are made.
But
on
you
the
know, what, and the other side of that is you know what you're going to get with Derry.
Yeah.
Like you don't, we're not 100% sure what we're going to get from Donegal tomorrow under Jim. But with a better idea what Derry brings to the table, because we've seen the way they have evolved as a team over this last couple of years, the style of football that they're playing. They've named an unchanged team from the side which lined out in the league final last night when the team was released. Now, we still don't have a Donegal team. We're waiting away to see if these players are going to be named in it. It may be later this afternoon when we get it. But from a Derry point of view, you know what you're getting. So you do, but Donegal has changed that much this year with all the problems that Donegal had with the injuries, that like you were playing attackers as defenders. Because Jim had to fill these holes. So that's why it's going to be, there seems to be, even though I think there's more pressure on Derry in this game that they have to come through, there's not as much as Donegal. And we're all waiting to see what Donegal will line out tomorrow and what way they are going to take on the Ulster champions.
Do you think it's fair to say that whatever happens, we can't really allow, you know, Derry to go 1-4, 1-5 up in the first half? Well, I suppose you can't really allow any team to do that.
Derry.
But it's just Derry. It would be very hard to turn.
I think we have to keep the goals out tomorrow. Like we've seen last year when we played Derry, we were cut open really badly. They have these players that run from deep and break lines, and they're able to find the gaps, and they found them with ease last year. So they did. We conceded 3 goals. We could have conceded a lot more in that championship game that was played in Balbuffet. I don't think we're going to concede a lot of goals tomorrow. I think it's going to be a lot tighter. But if you concede a lot early on and there's goals in that mix, Greg. It is going to make the task a bit more difficult as the game goes on. Some might say that Derry are streaks ahead of Donegal. I don't agree with that. I think Donegal is going to be very much in this game as we go to the closing stretch of the tie. And if you're in it at that stage of the game, anything can happen, Greg.
Yeah, it sounds to me though like you've made an awful lot of excuses for it not happening.
I believe I don't think there's going to be this gulf in it that some people are suggesting.
So
when you hear from some of the pundits down the country, further down south, the way they're talking about the game and how much Derry are going to have in Donegal, and I just wouldn't all buy into that now.
Okay, so where is it won and lost then? What way, as I said in previous games, you know, you've sort of seen the high press and, you know, Donegal playing different ways, maybe giving over a little bit of possession or what have you. I mean, how do you think, given the players that are likely to be available, how do you think we crack the Derry nut?
Well, the way the players are alternating at the moment, Greg, and Gaelic football, the way they change positions, I think the likes of, if Owen Ban-Gallagher is fit, we have to wait and see. The likes of Owen Ban-Gallagher and Pádraig Mógán could be two very key players, the way Donegal is playing at the moment. Are we going to kick it long? Are we going to take on the midfielders of Derry with the kickouts? Obviously, you've Conor Glass and you've Brendan Rodgers in there. We're going to have to wait to see if that's something that Jim is going to try. Listen, there's so many variables to this game, Greg. How it can be won and lost. But as back to what I said earlier, we have to wait to see tomorrow how this is going to be played out. It's not going to be all Derry. Donegal, I think they're going to run them close. They're going to give them a good game, and it could be back to the low scoring Ulster games that we've had in previous. But it all depends what the two of them brings to the table.
Fear if Donegal go into this game looking to keep it tight, that's when Derry blasts through that, builds up that lead, and things might be hard to pull back. But anyway, I don't know.
You have two masterminds of Gaelic football. And
Mickey
Hart, that's as far as you're going to get from it, Greg. Definitely not. Mickey Hart and Jim McGuinness.
Yeah.
Like Remember, Mickey Hart has never beaten Jim McGuinness, a Jim McGuinness Donegal team in championship football, an Ulster championship football. Never beat him in Ulster. Wow. So, like,
that's Mickey, some stat.
Yeah, Mickey Hart is not going, he's not, they're not going to take Donegal lightly. So they're not. But to see it evolve on the pitch and on the sideline as well, what these two men are going to bring to the table. Everybody's looking forward to it. The atmosphere is going to be electric. This thing's going to be sold out. Celtic Park's not the biggest ground in, in Ireland. I think it's 14,000, maybe just shy of 15,000.
The tickets have been hard.
Have been very, very hard to get.
A few fallouts in local clubs, I would say.
I would say there has been a few disputes, okay. Yeah. But like Donegal have used up their full allocation of tickets. Yeah. Like I was speaking yesterday to officials and they've used up all their allocation, all allocation
of
tickets.
It's going to be perfect.
There was a few tickets went in general sale yesterday, Greg, but it was a minute number. Like it wasn't in the hundreds. Mm. It was a very, very small number went on general sale yesterday. So it's a funny sort of week, Greg. I spoke to Eamon McGee last night on The Score. You always associate the championship.
What was Eamon's headline again?
Don't write off Donegal.
Don't write off Donegal.
And he's right. Don't write off Donegal. Donegal people are not writing off Donegal. The rest of the country are. Derry won't be writing off Donegal either.
Right. So as a commentator, how much can you enjoy the game?
Donegal's won and you enjoy it.
You can enjoy it at times.
It depends. Again, it depends how the game goes.
And who's on comms with you tomorrow?
I have Mark McHugh's alongside me. Brendan Devaney's back as well. He'll be back tanned. So he will. He's on his holidays.
He'll come back red as a beach. Uh-huh. Not tanned.
He's back as well. He's joining us in the commentary position. Michael McMullen of Gaelic Life is going to be involved in the preview.
Happy days.
We're going to start our coverage at 5:30. This is what I'm preparing for at the moment. We're just going through Jim McGuinness audio that's going to be part of that piece of the programme as well from 5:30 tomorrow. And then we'll have the match live then from a 6:15, Greg. So
goals. We can't concede goals.
No, and I don't think we will.
Yeah, okay.
I don't think we will. Right. I may be wrong, but if we keep it tight, we're definitely going to keep it tighter than what it was.
Yeah.
Celtic Park would be a tighter pitch as well. So we just have to wait and see.
All right, okay. So and there's so much else happening as well over the weekend. We can't go through it now.
Your Tyrone listeners will not be happy with you.
I know, but this is my fault. Who are they playing again?
They're playing Cavan on Sunday. The one now. Remember, Greg, right?
I'm only messing, by the way, winners, my Tyrone friends.
The winners of Derry and Donegal will play the winners of Cavan and Tyrone in the semi-final the following week, and then whoever wins that goes to the Ulster final on the 12th of May.
How do you think Cavan Tyrone will go?
I think Tyrone will have just maybe a bit too much for Cavan. Mm. Cavan had a big result against Monaghan, but Monaghan haven't been great this year. Mm. So they haven't, and it was a good result for them.
Yeah.
They
it's
do have home advantage,
games,
but
you don't know how much is
Tyrone,
it a good Cavan or a week in Monaghan. But that's what makes those.
The likes of McCurry and Canavan and these sort of players, I think Cavan will have bother dealing with them. So if whoever loses tomorrow, and indeed on Sunday as well, they have a 4-week wait then to the All-Ireland Series starts. I think it's the 18th or the 19th of May is the first round, which will include whoever loses this weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when you get the sides that go to the Ulster final, they're going to be out the following weekend. There are a lot of games coming thick and fast.
I know, I love it, yeah.
In a way, it's good, but from a player and a team point of view,
Nightmare.
It's not that good.
Yeah.
So it's not, because if you want to run an Ulster, Ryan McHugh was on this morning speaking in the Bulletin about the disrespect that there is for the Ulster Championship, because hands down,
it's the best. Of course it is.
Like Kerry are going to swan through Cork. Like we've seen Dublin last week against Meath.
That's reflected in the attendance of some of these
They're not going at 70%.
Listen, the thing where the mistake people make is listening to what the pundits say. Mm. Because to be honest with you, part of punditry now at that level is to antagonise. Roy Keane does it for the soccer. Do you know what I mean? I don't watch that stuff because I don't find it entertaining. We know what we want to be
entertained, but that's a struggle. Right, we'll give you this scenario, Greg. Derry are being tipped as All-Ireland champions, okay? As contenders for the All-Ireland this year. But Mickey Hart holds the Ulster Championship really, really strongly. He rates it really strongly. He wants another one. So if Mickey Hart is going to take his Derry side to the Ulster title, they're going to have three difficult games. They've got Donegal, We wait to see, will it be Tyrone or Cavan? And then probably Armagh, who are on the easy side of the draw in the Ulster final. So they won the Ulster. There's three really, really difficult games. And then you're going into an All-Ireland series. Well, if you look what Kerry have to do, they don't have difficult games in Munster. Dublin don't have difficult... we'll only know in time.
Who's better off?
We'll only know in time. I think that could be... When you then go into the All-Ireland series, that having come through that in such a short period of time, and then 2 weeks after your Ulster final, you're into an All-Ireland series.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah,
I think Derry are tooled better for that journey than maybe we are. But anyway, we'll get over tomorrow night and see what the crowd.
We'll see what happens tomorrow. Everybody enjoy the game.
So
it's going to be fantastic.
Coverage starts at
5:30. Tune our way if you're not there. We'll have expert match analysis.
Brendan Devaney, Martin McHugh.
And Michael McMullen of Gaelic Life.
Michael McMullen. All right, brilliant.
Very intelligent man who knows a lot about Gaelic football in Ulster.
Okay.
So he's a Derry man. So he'll give the Derry views, but he knows a lot about Gaelic football.
And
of course,
right across the weekend, as I said, there's so much sport on, and Oisín and his team will have you.
And the Harps are playing tonight.
Down in
Cove Ramblers. Imagine sitting on a bus today, Greg, going to Cove. It's a long old trip, and
they
then playing
the
a
last
football
one,
match.
Didn't they?
Cove have only won one this year, and it was against Van Harps, and that was in Balbuffet.
Okay.
So it was. But good luck to the Harps tonight, and there will be updates from that game as well.
Happy days, Oisín. Thanks so much for calling down.
Okay, great.
It's going to be brilliant. And then there's Ryan Garcia versus Devin Haney in the middle of the night, too, boxing.
But you sit up and watch boxing in the middle of the night. I don't.
Well, I'll sit in the lounge.
I'll get
Hudson up and me and him will get on
the I don't do that. I like my sleep.
All right. Back after these.